Hello, Silver City and Grant County. You are listening to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I will be your host for today's show. The New Mexico Wilderness Alliance is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection, restoration, and continued enjoyment of New Mexico's wild lands and wilderness areas. On today's program, I am pleased to welcome Jason Amaro, the New Mexico Sportsman Coordinator with Trout Unlimited, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to conserve, protect, and restore North America's cold water fisheries and their watersheds. Jason grew up along the banks of the Rio Grande River in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He attended college at New Mexico Tech University in Socorro and New Mexico Highlands University in Las Vegas. He holds degrees in mathematics, theoretical physics, and secondary education. Jason, welcome to Earth Matters, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You spent a considerable amount of time as a public school teacher in New Mexico and Alaska, right?
Absolutely.
And you also spent a lot of time as a fly fishing guide in northern New Mexico in places like the Valles Caldera and the Valle Vidal. Would you mind telling our listeners about how you found a passion to be both a teacher and an advocate for wild places?
You know, well, it's pretty, you know, I'm one of those guys that if I don't like something, I'm going to go out and try to change it. It's kind of my situation. I went to Tech in Socorro. Thought I wanted to be an engineer, thought I wanted to be a scientist, and then I realized that I had to get my PhD if I wanted to do anything. So I'm like, well, that's probably not for me. So I decided, heck, I want to save the world. So I went to Highlands in Las Vegas, New Mexico, got my teaching certificate, and I taught in the reservation up in Pewaukee.
Oh, wow.
It was a really good experience. But there's a funny story. One time when I was teaching, my first year teacher, you know, things were tight, you know, and money's pretty rough when you're an educator.
It really is.
It's just kind of the way it is. And I remember one time, you know, back in that was before electronic deposits, and the checks were there. And, you know, the secretary's handing out checks, and I look at my check, and wow, I got a $20 raise. Wow, I wonder what that was all about. So then I went home, you know, to go spend my 20 bucks, and then I realized I had the janitor's check.
Oh.
So I was like, well, that didn't work out very well. So then I realized that if I ever wanted to have a family and kids and that type of thing, I I really needed to get, you know, kind of a little more lucrative job. So then I said, I'm going to spend 2 more years in Alaska. I'm going to go teach. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to hunt. I'm going to fish. I'm going to enjoy the culture. So it was like a July at 1 o'clock. I called the Bering Strait School District in Alaska, and I said, hey, I'm a teacher. Do you have a position for me? It's 1 o'clock. By 2 o'clock, I was hired and had plane tickets.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was in a hunting, fishing subsistence village. I taught K-12, literally no grocery stores. You know, the plane would fly over the village, drop food out. We'd all run out and pick it up. It was a really neat experience. I really think it shaped kind of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
That made me realize that we are kind of part of this whole cycle.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the lower 48, we hunt and fish, and often it's time for recreation, that type of thing. But in Alaska, it's subsistence. It's really what you have to do. So it kind of made me realize that there's a big connectivity between everything, and we really need to be part of the cycle. And it really shaped kind of who I was. And then I came back and I guided up at the lodge at Chama for a very exclusive clientele. And if that made me realize anything, is that we're all people, no matter how much you make, no matter how much you don't make.
Yeah.
You know, we're all people and we do things the same way. So I figured, you know, I'm going to make a difference in the world. So after that happened, I did my 2 years in Alaska. I came back, basically joined the corporate world. I worked out at Fort Baird for a while. And then I worked for a company in New York implementing electronic healthcare records.
Oh, wow.
So traveled the country. It was 10 years of, you know, the corporate grind and all that good stuff. And then I got married. I have to Candace, my wife, and 2 beautiful kids, Brock and Zoe. And I realized, you know, I'm not making a difference. You know, I'm making some dude rich in New York. And it's just not making a difference. So then we started looking at, you know, different opportunities out there with Trout Unlimited and the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. I'm on the board of directors there. And then the Gila diversion issue came up, and that kind of lit a fire under me. You know, I'm like, you know, this just isn't a good idea. So, you know, that whole process. And then the opportunity with Trout Unlimited came up, and I'm like, you know, we sat down with my family and my wife, and you know, we're going to take a humongous pay cut, so hold on, but we're going to make it work. So got a job with TU, and super fortunate. I mean, it's a great organization, and just being able to work with people that really have a passion, you know, and what's that saying? It's more important to be significant than successful. And I really believe that. I mean, if we all make a little bit of a difference, it'll be okay. Yeah, so I work for TU now, kind of travel New Mexico. I'm their sportsman's conservation coordinator. So I deal a lot with the sportsman's issues, whether they be, you know, hunting, fishing, forest management plans, all that good stuff. So it's a change, but I really, really enjoy it. And like I said, we're making a difference. And in New Mexico, you think trout, you know, Trout Unlimited, you know, there's no trout anymore. Well, we're really making a difference with our Gila trout up in, you know, in the Gila wilderness. And it's an amazing story that if people have never had the opportunity, you know, maybe we could talk about it. But
yeah.
So Gila trout are awesome. And then we're reintroducing Rio Grande cutthroats in the Animas over on the Ted Turner property.
Yeah.
And then we're going to reintroduce Rio Grande cutthroats over in Ruidoso. So I didn't even know they were fish.
Is that in collaboration with the Mexico Department of Game and Fish?
So, yeah, we work very, very heavily with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, New Mexico Department of Game and Fish, just all hands on deck. You know, no one organization can do it alone.
Yeah.
And TU is pretty fortunate that we have some really awesome, awesome volunteers. The way TU is organized is basically you have your national level, and then under that you have your chapters. And the chapters are ones that do the groundwork. They have trout in the classroom, which you rear eggs to fry and you release them in the, wherever we're going to release them. But
trout in the classroom.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that. What is that all about?
So basically, we'll come out. We'll set you up with great big aquariums.
At schools.
Yeah. So we have talked about doing, now that I'm here recently, we're going to really try to get in some of the schools in Silver City.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so basically what we do is we come out, we set you up with all the hardware, and then we'll come out and bring you eggs, and you rear them from egg to little fish, and you release them. And it's a pretty cool program. It makes people realize that they can be engaged in the process. They can make a difference. You know, hatchery and trout that are grown in a tank, those aren't the ultimate answer to our fish populations, but it helps out a little bit. Whether we want to admit it or not, I mean, we live in the desert. You know, I go to these Game and Fish Commission meetings and these fishery management meetings, and people says, we want more fish. I want more fish. You know, we need more fish. Well, it's like, we need more water. We need more water.
Right.
We need more water. You know, it's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, it's a whole, you know, a very big picture look at things. And if we can strike, you know, one or two kids, get them involved in conservation, then heck, man, we have done an amazing thing.
Right.
Because, you know, let's face it, our generation, our futures are set. We're going to do what we're going to do. It's the little ones that we need to really foster. And as sportsmen, and I really want to kind of stress this, is that it's almost hard to even explain. You get a little emotional about it. Like over the last three, four, five years, sportsmen have become really big conservationists. They're the ones that fund these projects. And I think they're getting it. So it's no longer a matter of take, take, take. They're actually giving, giving, giving. There's a Robertson-Pittman Act of 13% of all sportsman activities, sportsman products go back to the Department of Game and Fish. It's a third of the Department of Game and Fish's budget.
Wow.
So, you know, sportsmen are really, they're stepping up.
That's significant.
Yeah. Without that, you know, the Department of Game and Fish could not afford to do the conservation issue, conservation projects.
And there's also things like the Habitat Stamp program.
Yeah, Habitat Stamp. The secret, little dirty secret I'll say there is that so it's like $5 or $10. I don't know exactly
what it is. Tell our listeners what that is exactly first.
So basically, if you want to hunt or fish in certain areas, you pay, I think it's $5, $10. And I don't even know anymore because it's just part of doing business now. You know, you
right.
do it. And I think sportsmen happily pay it. Anyways, basically it's $5 or $10 that goes directly back into conservation, back into the habitat, builds water tanks, does some pinon and juniper clearing. You know, it really goes back on the ground projects. The neat part is that it's not just to benefit, you know, elk or deer, trout or fish, but it's everything, whether it be, you know, a willow flycatcher over in Gila or something like that. So it's a really big thing. The thing that I always stress and I want to make clear is that with most of that money is raised on fishing licenses, but most of the money goes to non-fishing projects. So yeah, kind of crazy there. But again, you think big picture. And I've always said that you know, as a conservationist or someone that's really interested in hunting and fishing, we're grass farmers. You know, the better the grass is, the better the watersheds are. The better
I like the, that, grass farmers.
Yeah, we're grass farmers. You know, the better the streams are, the better riparian areas are. There's more food for elk and deer, coos deer. You know, so if you take that one little picture and say, I grow grass, you know, then I think it's a big, it really expands to all the species out there. And we're now looking at a holistic view of taking care of our environment. So it's going to take us a little while. And sometimes it's a little depressing because you always hear about these, you know, projects to fix something. I'm like, well, at what point do we ever get to a point where everything's fixed? Hmm. And I don't know if we'll ever get there, you know, but, you know, so Try to Limit's been awesome. Super good opportunities. You can make a difference. And if I say anything and it's listening, is people should just get involved, When I got into the whole Child Unlimited, I was really surprised by the coalitions that are created. Like Child Unlimited and Hunt and Fishing Group, Sportsman Conservation Group. But we work with, you know, like your organization, right. We work on all types of organizations, right. You know, for a common cause. Sure, we may be on different sides of things, but we really focus on what unites us. And I think that's important.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM, and we'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with Jason Amaro, the New Mexico Sportsman Conservation Coordinator with Trout Unlimited, which is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to conserve, protect, and restore North America's cold water fisheries and their watersheds. Jason, tell us a little bit more about Trout Unlimited and what the organization does from a national perspective, as well as how the different chapters sort of work, especially here in New Mexico and the work that you're doing in the Gila region.
Absolutely. So I work for what they call the national. So there's two of us in the state of New Mexico, myself and Toner Mitchell. Toner Mitchell is the public lands coordinator. I'm more of a sportsman's conservation coordinator. At a national level, we try to really push the large issues, whether it be, you know, the pebble mine up in Alaska, whether it be some of the mine cleanup in up in Animas. Whether it's larger fish initiatives. We have a Southwestern Native Fish Initiative. It's been renamed a few times. But basically, it's really making an effort to get native and wild fish back into our cold water fisheries. We work a lot in Arizona on the White Mountain Apache to help get Apache trout reestablished, I want to say. We work on the Gila trout here in New Mexico. There's the Gila trout recovery team. Which has been awesome, and it's a really good group of people from, you know, Trout Unlimited, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. There's a couple of private contractors, Game and Fish. I mean, it's this really big coalition of people that you'd never realize kind of at the same group would get together, but we all have this one mission. You know, part of the guys want to have fish out there for the sake of having fish, which is great. Then we have other groups that want to have fish out there so they can catch them. You know, it's just this whole, you know, but we're all on the same page, and I think that's what really makes TU different. Is we don't want to go head-to-head every time. We don't want to battle and battle and battle. It's not what it's about. You don't get anything done. But if you work together and you give and take and that type of thing, then overall it's a much better product in the end. Things that I have been involved in personally over the last couple of years are the forest plans. And we'll be working on those in New Mexico. And in New Mexico, they're kind of piloting the whole forest management plan process for the nation. So it's kind of scary because never know what you're going to get depending mm-hmm. on what forest plan you're in, and you just kind of have to roll with punches. TU has a really awesome set of support staff. Like, I have senior biologists that I can call on a regular basis and say, hey, Kathy, I need help. You know, and, you know, she always ribs me and gives me a hard time. And it's like but she gets me the information I need, whether it's watersheds that need to be protected or streams, like a very detailed stream of are there fish in there? Should we put fish in there? Do the conditions, are they right for fish? So we have a really great mapping system. We have people that work in Washington, D.C. with, you know, everything from public land transfer to water protection issues and that type of thing. We're in Colorado right now, and it's going to hit New Mexico pretty soon. We all know about the Animas spill,
right.
That turned, you know, Animas a funky color of orange. And that's scary. And basically, because of the 1872 mine bill, no one can go in and clean those up without fear of retribution.
Right.
So we're really pushing hard to say, hey, let's change some of these rules. So like if Trout Unlimited wanted to go in and clean up some of these mines, we could without possibly getting in trouble. We really dodged a bullet in Animas. Fortunately, that fishery's coming back. And if many people in New Mexico know, the San Juan fishery is a world-renowned fishery. I call it the Disneyland of fly fishing because it's kind of artificial. You know, it's a cold water fishery. The water comes up from underneath the dam. It's really cold, really consistent. There's some really strict regulations, so the fish get humongous. And it's just a good time. But the economic, if the San Juan tailwater fishery had crashed because of the Animas spill, which it didn't, the economy in Farmington would have crashed. I believe you're from Aztec and maybe you know a little bit about that, but it's huge. I mean, that fishery alone hires probably 100 guides. There's five little fly shops there. There's boats. There's lodging. There's, you know, it's scary. I mean, sportsmen really bring a lot of money to the table. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we're focused on. Anyways, so kind of go around circles. So those are some of the things we work on. My big work plan, I call it, in New Mexico, forest management plans, some of the public land transfer stuff. The Gila trout is kind of, you know, I always call them my fish, but there's probably about 50 people that call them my fish. I really love the Gila trout. I mean, for those of you who have not fished for Gila trout, you really need to get out there and give it a shot. They're just an amazing fish. There are some that are in Willow Creek, which are right along the road, but there are also some that are in some very remote areas. So if you want to hike 3 or 4 miles, that's an awesome opportunity just to get out and see what's out there.
Now, I was told not too long ago that the Gila trout is actually from the Pleistocene, that it's a Pleistocene salmon that got sort of isolated into, you know, what is now modern day New Mexico. But can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. Like, man, see, I'm really stretching my brain here on this one. But a Gila trout used to run to the ocean.
It's amazing.
Used to run to the ocean, and with time, it's been cut off from the ocean, so it no longer migrates out and in. The Gila trout is also a little different, that there are several different strains of Gila trout. There's like an Iron Creek, a Willow Creek, Whiskey Creek. So they're all very distinct and different strains of Gila trout, which is different than most other fish. I always say that, you know, selfishly, that we really need to protect the Gila trout because it's one of the fewer fish, native cutthroats, that can deal with warmer waters. Just because they grew up in the Southwest.
Right.
It's where they grew up. If you've ever, you know, been on some of those Gila trout streams, they're 2 feet wide, you know, and they live in puddles and they, you know, they barely eke out a living. So it's just a very unique fish. It handles warmer temperatures. It's beautiful. Looks like no other fish out there. It's this beautiful buttery color, and it's a good time. I always say that the Gila trout looks like the sunset of New Mexico.
Huh.
It's that has those very different, bright, vibrant colors. It's something really to be appreciated. And, you know, in New Mexico, we have a Rio Grande cutthroat, which is our native fish. And those are more in the northern part of the state. Again, a beautiful fish. It has a much stronger foothold. They're not so, I don't want to say endangered, but there's more of them and there's more opportunities to fish for them and go opportunities to see them. The Gila trout, if it were not for entities like Trout Unlimited, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Game and Fish Department, volunteers, those fish would literally have been extinct within the last 10 years. All of the, and I say this literally, all of the watersheds that have had Gila trout have had significant damage due to fires.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happened is like Whitewater Baldy, fire hit, burned through. After the fire went through, there was an assessment team that went in. They went in on horseback, literally wearing fire retardant shirts. The whole water was hot. And they're there catching fish, you know, electroshocking fish to pull them out before the mudslides and the ash flows got there. And then they transported them all to our national fishery up in Mora, New Mexico. And they kind of like held them until the conditions are going to get back. And they're really starting to reintroduce those now.
So what is the population like of the Gila trout in the Gila wilderness?
So in the wilderness, I mean, that's hard to say because, you know, Game and Fish says, oh, we dumped 135 fish. I mean, I don't know if someone's job is to count 135 fish. there are several good populations, and I'm sure I'm going to forget a few. But Willow Creek is probably the most accessible and has the highest population of fish. There's great camping along the stream beds there. Game and Fish often puts their excess fish in there, so sometimes there's great big fish in there. Willow Creek drains into Halita Creek.
Mm.
Halita Creek is kind of, if you've fished much, it's more like a northern Colorado type of stream. It's really, really pretty. So there's Willow Creek, Halita Creek, and then there are a bunch of Gila trout in Snow Lake, Okay. So, you know, Snow Lake is fun. It's kind of a big mud hole. My mom and dad always tell stories about fishing Snow Lake like 20 years ago. And my mom's like, we used to catch them all the time. And we caught a whole bunch on marshmallows. And she tells the stories. I'm like, Mom, those days are gone. So, you know, and like fishermen, we always remember the best days we've ever had. We never remember the worst days. So I think my mom was guilty of that. So, but she used to love Snow Lake. And then...
Can the trout get out of Snow Lake and into the Middle Fork?
So in theory, no. But the fish wanted to get into the Middle Fork, they could probably go down Willow Creek, then through Halita Creek, and then down. And then there's Iron Creek, and there's mm-hmm. Whiskey Creek, and there's a whole bunch of little different creeks out there that actually have fish. Some are recovery populations, and some are recreation populations. See, I didn't know that before I got kind of involved in the game, and I was like, well, okay. So basically, a recovery population, it's just they're trying to find one more meta populations of fish where they can kind of stash in the wilderness, not tell anybody. But if all heck ever broke loose, they can go and pull some of those fish out and put them somewhere else, kind of like a money in the bank. And then you have your recreation populations. That's like Willow Creek, Black Canyon, Snow Lake, some of the Middle Fork. Those are recreation populations. So if you're ever hiking in the wilderness and you see a big, we call them fish barriers. It looks like a wall. And basically what's happening is they're trying to separate a Gila trout from the other, what I call cut mutts. Cut mutts are like a combination of cutthroat, rainbow,
catfish,
not quite catfish, but just these goofy little fish that have no genetic purity.
And so, are those a big problem for the recovery of the Gila trout?
Absolutely.
These sort of like not necessarily native species?
Absolutely. So what happens now is Department of Game and Fish, they only stock triploid rainbow trout. So a triploid trout is a sterile trout. So the idea is they're not going to degrade any natural fish population.
Interesting.
So that's a conscious effort what they do, and they've been doing that for like the last 10 or 15 years. But, you know, back in the day, it wasn't unheard of for some cowboy that pulled fish off a train in, you know, Socorro to go dump them in the Gila just because I thought it was a good idea. And it's, you know, it just happened. We look back at it and, oh my gosh, what a crazy mistake. But, you know, it's hard for us to judge what happened 100 years ago because he probably thought he was doing the right thing. In Black Canyon, it's been a real problem. So Black Canyon has a barrier there, and it's a humongous cement barrier, and it's ugly as all get out, but it does a good job. You know, it tries to separate the Gila trout from below, or Gila trout above, and then everything else below. And every once in a while, we'll go in there, game and fish, and we'll do some electroshocking. We find just random fish, whether it be a brown trout or a rainbow or something. And we're like, well, how do these fish get in here? And I'm not going to say it's environmental sabotage or any of that craziness, but these fish are coming from somewhere. You know, so every once in a while it happens, and it makes you wonder, you know, I'm sure someone has a good intention and good heart, but, you know.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM, and we'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Membrus Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's program. On today's show, we've been talking with Jason Amaro, the New Mexico Sportsman Conservation Coordinator with Trout Unlimited, which is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to conserve, protect, and restore North America's cold water fisheries and their watersheds. Now, Jason, we just spent the last segment talking about the Gila trout, and one thing I just wanted to kind of throw out there is we were talking about the recovery of them and these non-native species that are sort of competing with them. Would you advise people to take their fly rod and catch as many catfish and brown trouts as possible on the Gila River to help out?
Absolutely. You know, we call it catch and grease. Instead of catch and release, you want to grease them up and eat them. There's absolutely nothing wrong with eating a few fish. I do it. You know, people do it. It's just kind of who we are.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with a trout or even, you know, whatever over a fire. I mean, go out and eat them.
And you mentioned earlier that a big part of your work plan and your job description here in New Mexico is to work on forest planning. I also did the same thing with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. I spent some time working on the Cibola National Forest, which was one of these, what they called early adopter forests that were implementing the new regulations for how our forests are being managed. But it sounds like you're working on multiple forest plans. I'm just currently focused on the Gila National Forest, and that's a big undertaking. Can you tell our listeners about the work that you're doing on forest planning, why it's important, and what are the differences between, say, the Carson National Forest and the Santa Fe National Forest and the Lincoln and the Gila and the Cibola? Are they all following the same kind of trajectory, or are they sort of taking different approaches. What's your take on it?
So absolutely. So when I got hired, you know, one of the questions is, what do you know about forest planning? And I'm like, yeah, I'll figure it out. And it's been a battle. It's been tough. I mean, these forest plans are humongous.
Yeah.
You know, the last document I read was like 500 pages. So you look at that and you're like, how in the heck? I mean, I haven't read anything that big. Will ever. So it's one of those things. And basically what a forest management plan is how do we want our forests to look like in 10, 20, 30 years? Our current management plan is almost 10, 20, 30 years old. It's old. So think about what the way our world looked like 20 years ago. You know, no cell phones, OHVs, you know, roads weren't everywhere. You know, there were a lot less people. Drought was just kind of a, what? Drought? Mm. So those forest plans didn't address any of those major, major issues. Riparian areas, you know, they're still in pretty good shape. So the idea is, what do we want our forests to look like in our lifetime? And basically, the Gila, the Lincoln, well, let me back up. So the Santa Fe and Carson, they are currently a year ahead of the Lincoln and the Gila. And like you said earlier, the Cibola is kind of the pilot. So they're all kind of at different stages right now. The way these forest management plans, and I'll just kind of boil it down into English because every time you go to one, it's explained a little bit different. So bottom line, this is what happens. Okay, so there's assessment. There's an assessment on the Gila or on the National Forest. Like, what does it look like right now? So someone goes out there, they write a 500-page document on, you know, this area needs to be cleaned up. You know, we have dead and standing trees here. You know, this area shouldn't have roads and it does have roads. Or, well, and let me back up. These roads are in disrepair. Let me say it that way. So these roads are in bad shape. Some of the campgrounds are in rough shape. You know, this, what does the ground look like now? So they go out there and assess. And then we can offer our comments. So then we comment and say, you know, I agree with that. I don't agree with that. Maybe you guys should look at this. So then they take those comments. And then they come up with a plan and an EIS statement and all that good stuff. And they say, so what's an assessment? Then they come up with a plan on what they're going to do. How are they going to make it look better? And then after they make it look better, then they come up with the actual management plan itself and then the monitoring. So you figure out what's there. You come up with a plan and then you implement that plan. That's in a nutshell kind of what they're trying to do. As you can imagine, it's a very big process. The National Forest, I think they're doing a pretty good job. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But I think they're doing all right. I think their hearts are in the right place. They're really, really trying to listen. For the Gila, there were meetings all over the Southwest. There were some in, you know, Glenwood Reserve, some in Arizona, you know, here in New Mexico or here in Silver City. And it's really interesting because when you go to a meeting, say, in Camado, that's much different than a meeting in Silver City. I mean, just the users that of the National Forest are different. So, you know, those poor guys in the National Forest, they're getting hit from all sides.
Yeah.
You know, there's no winners. But one of their big tasks was to really, really get the public involved. So there was going to be more meetings here in New Mexico, or here in Silver City specifically. I have a website called New Mexico Sportsman's Forest Planning Team, or the New Mexico Sportsman. We also have a Facebook page. You can see me and Jason Amaro, where I try to keep everybody up to date. So forest plans are tough. It's part of the process. And I always say that it's your once in 20 years to vote. I mean, this is your opportunity in 20 years to 30 years to help shape the national forests in the way you want to look. You know, there's been talk about creating these sportsmen's conservation areas. So maybe not big wilderness areas, the big W or the gold standard, but maybe with something that's a little more restrictive or a little less restrictive than big wilderness. But still has some protections. You know, Willow Creek would be a perfect example. Halita Creek. I mean, if we could really conserve those areas and make sure that they're protected, you know, because that's one of the few streams up there that really has water year-round. I mean, that in that area, there's wonderful elk calving areas. Deer are in that area. Bear, mountain lions. You know, there's a really kind of a good area that we really need to look at and say, hey, this is something that we may want to protect long-term. Another one would be Black Canyon. That's a really good area. I always say Sapayo Creek, and I always say it wrong, but Sapayo Creek
I think you got it okay.
I always butcher it. That's another area that we may consider, you know, hey, this is a really cool little area that we want to protect and that we want to make sure that's conserved in some way. I mean, there's not a ton of trout in there. I used to fish that little Sapayo Creek, and I used to think, man, my fishing skills are terrible. I've only caught 4 fish over the last 2 miles. But then I went in there with Game and Fish, and we did an electroshocking. and there were like 8 fish per mile because the water is so warm. So I'm like, hey, I guess I'm doing all right. But, you know, so those are the little areas that are close to town. If you want to take your kids hiking along the stream, you can. You know, Turkey Creek is another example up there where they're the possible diversion is.
Yeah.
Just areas that we want to protect. Like I said, this is where our once in 20 years to vote. How do we want this forest to look like? We just need to be heard. And then wherever things fall, they fall. One thing I do want to stress is that this is absolutely different than the travel management plan. So people always get confused on those two issues. It's like forest management plan, and then they hear travel management plan. So basically, a travel management plan is actually defines the roads.
Right.
The forest management plan, it says the state of those roads. And so we need to make sure that we keep our, you know, our so-called eye on the prize and make sure we keep everything in context. Because the travel management plans, those have been decided and done. But the forest management plan says, okay, these are the roads. Now let's maintain them. Let's take care of them. Make sure they're not, you know, silting out one of the creeks. You know, that's a big issue right now in the Gila. And every time we get a fire,
right,
you know, that ash has to go somewhere. And it's pretty scary. The forest as we see it is changing right before our eyes. The good thing is that so much is burnt that there's not a lot left to burn. So everything's in a state of repair, I guess. But, you know, so forest management plans, you know, they're intense, they're long. It's going to take, from start to end, the process was supposed to take like 3 years. No, it's not going to. I don't think anything the federal government takes, it's 3 years. It's going to be a 10-year project. And that's why I'm grateful for organizations like Toronto Unlimited that give me the opportunity to stay in long term. Because it's hard. It's hard for the average person to get engaged and stay engaged for 10 years. But we're working through to you. That's like kind of my job. So, you know, it forces me to stay engaged for the long haul.
So you've been stressing a lot about the importance of people and the public participating in forest planning process. What's your sort of assessment on the early rounds of participation from sportsmen in the forest planning? Have you seen sportsmen turning out in good numbers, good healthy numbers? Are there voices and concerns being addressed? And if not, what ways are you trying to engage more sportsmen to get involved, to have their voices heard on these critical issues?
Absolutely. So I'll jump up on my soapbox here. It's been rough. It has absolutely been rough. And I get a little angry sometimes, but it's because sportsmen, I mean, we're just the average people. I mean, we don't have time to drive all the way up to Kamado. We don't have time to drive to Glenwood. We're struggling. We're trying to support a family. It's tough. I'll be honest in saying that for every one sportsman, there's probably 10 to 15 non-sportsmen. That's just the way the numbers are, you know, and in our society, we have a lot of people that are using the national forest to make profit. You know, that's just the way it is, whether it be somebody that's cutting trees, someone that's running cattle. And that's their job, is to go to these meetings and be heard. So a lot of times our interests get overrun by those. I'm not saying that we shouldn't log. I'm not saying that we shouldn't run cattle, but we need to do it responsibly. And we need to be heard, and we need to watch out for ourselves. Sportsmen need to speak up and advocate for ourselves, because if we don't, we're going to get run over. And it's sad. It's just kind of what I'm seeing right now. Even here in Silver City, very few sportsmen were there. And it's we're going to get run over if we're not careful. Sportsmen are getting pressure from all sides right now. Right wing, left wing, Republican, Democrat, you know, conservative, liberal, I always say, is sportsmen are an easy target. And they're coming after things that we consider, you know, valuable and things that we cherish, just because we don't engage. And it's by nature, sportsmen are kind of recluse. They kind of, you know, hang out. They'd rather be in the mountains than at some meeting. And I would too. I'd rather be in the wilderness playing around.
I hear you on that one.
Than talking about the wilderness. But we need to be engaged. We need to be heard. Fortunately, you know, I'm able to go to a lot of those meetings. But I tell you what, you'll get these sign-on letters, or you'll get these, you know, hey, be involved type of thing. But the National Forest planners, they really react to a phone call or an email, a personal touch. You know, sometimes we see these, you'll see someone come into a meeting and they'll say, I have 30,000 signatures. And you're like, what? 30,000 signatures? That'd be all. You couldn't do that in Silver City, get 30,000 signatures. But 2 or 3, 4 or 5, 10 people calling and making a personal effort, sometimes that has more weight than all 30,000 signatures. So I think people just need to, you know, get down there and go and call and go to the Gila National Forest offices and call those guys up and say, hey, let's go for coffee. I want to talk about this. And you may not hear exactly what you want, but at least you're part of the process. And that's, I think that's the big picture, is we all need to be part of the process. We need to be engaged. We need to be heard. If people ever have questions, they can get a hold of me, Jason Amaro, on Facebook, or jamaro@tu.org. Get a hold of me, you know, send me an email, call me, whatever. Let's get on the same page.
And what's Trout Unlimited's website, Jason?
It's tu.org.
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 And you mentioned earlier a New Mexico Sportsman Forest Planning Team.
So what's happening right now? Well, let me jump up on the soapbox again. So in New Mexico, we are full of organizations that are run nationally on the sportsman level. So you have all these super huge national organizations, stuff like, you know, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, which does great work. Mule Deer Federation does great work. National Wild Turkey Federation, they do great work. So these are all these national organizations, but unfortunately they don't dive in, they don't readily jump into a lot of these issues like forest planning. What they do is they have these great big fundraisers and they do their thing, which is fine, but you know, I've tried to engage them a lot of times, and it's, you know, you get the, well, we're not really interested in, you know, kind of working on those forest plans. But in New Mexico, and I'll just name them, Trout Unlimited, I mean, that's what I do 75% of my time, is forest planning, sportsman's conservation issues in New Mexico on the ground. That's what I do. There's just no way around it. You know, I don't have to worry about banquets or any of that good stuff. I'm just on the ground working on these issues. So Trout Unlimited's a group. New Mexico Wildlife Federation up in Albuquerque is another really, really group. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, another great group. So after being doing this for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, you kind of see who's got money in the game. And those are the three groups. Oh, I'm not missing anybody. But those are the three groups that really, really advocate for sportsmen. And I'll be the first one to say, are they perfect? Absolutely not. They are not perfect, not even close. But, you know, they're pretty dang close. And the only way you're going to find a perfect group is to start your own group. You know, you're never going to be 100% satisfied with these groups. But those three are, they have people on the ground, which is important.
Yeah.
You need to be to show up at these meetings. You need to be heard. You need to advocate. And, you know, sure, I have to drive across the strait sometimes, and I'm in, you know, Mora, New Mexico, at, you know, middle of night. And, you know, that's always an interesting event. But, you know, just these little areas, you have to go to them. You have to be heard. You have to be part of the process.
We are talking with Jason Amaro, the New Mexico Sportsman Conservation Coordinator with Trout Unlimited, and we'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with Jason Amaro, the New Mexico Sportsman Conservation Coordinator with Trout Unlimited, which is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to conserve, protect, and restore North America's cold water fisheries and their watersheds. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we've covered quite a bit of ground, and there's actually a lot more in my notes that I wanted us to talk about, but unfortunately, we're not going to have enough time to do all that. So I just jump into some of the great things that are coming up, like this hunter education course, and tell our listeners what that's all about.
So absolutely. On January 16th and 17th here in Santa Clara, there's going to be a hunter education instructor course. And basically, it's going to teach people how to become hunters ed instructors. And I think it's really important to get out there and be involved. You can contact me at jamaro, J-A-M-A-R-O, jamaro at tu.org. And what I want to stress is you don't even have to be a hunter to go to these courses. I want to stress that. You know, hunter education, it covers stuff like firearm safety, how to be safe in the backcountry, how to be safe on your local trail. I think it's really important, you know, whether we want to admit it or not, our children, our kids, they are going to be exposed to some sort of firearm in their life without a parent being around. Good or bad, that's up for you to decide. But we need to teach our kids what to do and what not to do. We need to teach them that, you know, every gun should be treated as a loaded weapon, and don't touch the dang thing. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. You know, and that's kind of what these hunter ed instructor courses do, is get involved, you know, show them what to do and what not to do, because we can't be there all the time, and we need to educate those around us. So, you know, I don't ever want to hear about, you know, firearm accidents in Silver City and Grant County. I mean, we need to be proactive, and we need to educate our kids, because if we don't and we turn a blind eye, That's how accidents happen.
And this is January 16th and 17th in Santa Clara?
Yes.
Where in Santa Clara?
At the Armory.
At the Armory.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So again, give me a call or send me an email, and then we can get you guys hooked up and get you signed up. Because the more hunter ed instructors we have, the more kids we can educate. And that's really what it's all about. I'll be there. Hopefully we'll get a good turnout. This is the opportunity for people to get involved, to make a difference.
A couple of other issues that I had in my notes to talk with you about were obviously the Gila River diversion. We sort of briefly touched on that. And then also there's this move afoot to transfer federal public lands to states, and that could potentially be sold and privatized. Which of those issues would you want to maybe get into in the final, I don't know, 10 minutes of the show?
Well, we could. This is going to do a couple more shows. But
yeah.
So let's talk about public land transfer. So public land transfer, it's the whole idea that the state can manage the land better than the feds. So, you know, when this whole thing came out, I was like, what? Maybe. Okay. It might happen. Maybe. You know, just always wondering. So then I really started digging. And apparently every 20 years or so, there's this big push at the national level to get rid or liquidate federal lands. A couple years ago, 20 or 30 years ago, it was called the Sagebrush Rebellion. You can Google that. There's a whole history there. But the idea is that they want to transfer federal land to state land or state trust land. And that's very specific. So federal land, Gila National Forest, let's go ahead and give it to the state of New Mexico. Okay. Aubrey Dunn, it's yours. Okay. So now he's going to have to manage it. So if we think about, I don't know, 5 years ago before the Silver Fire, before the Signal Peak Fire,
yeah.
I mean, those fires cost us almost probably $10 million plus that the state cannot absorb that type of bill. I mean, just think about fires. How the heck are we going to pay for that?
Just on the fiscal side of it.
Yeah. So you're like, whoa, you know.
But we'll sell it.
Yeah. We'll see. Exactly. So it's this idea is we're going to take the land, then we're going to try to manage it. And then if we can't manage it, we're going to sell it to have money to manage it. So it's just kind of this vicious little cycle. It's not a good idea. If you talk about state trust land, sportsmen were literally almost locked off a state trust land this year. So those that are not part of they're in the know or they kind of knew on a periphery is basically what happens is Aubrey Dunn, he's our state land commissioner. So he sets the rates that the Department of Game and Fish pays for sportsmen to access that state land. So over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, it's been at $200,000 a year. So $200,000 a year allows you to hunt and fish on state land if you have a valid hunting license. So Aubrey Dunn kind of came up with these crazy ideas and, you know, it went up as high as $5 million, you know, $2 or $3 million, and I think they settled at $1 million. And people, it's purely at his prerogative, whatever that money is set at. And to be honest with you guys, it's not about the money. Aubrey Dunn raises $650 million off oil and gas revenues. So the $800,000 that he's making up is pocket change for him. So, you know, and people are, you know, it's $1 million. That's a good deal. But, you know, it's not really as the money that really got me on this one. It was more the way he negotiates or refused to negotiate. For example, we still can't camp on state land. You can only be on state land, I think, 2 days before your hunt, 2 or 3 days before your hunt. And then if you have a hunt on state land, you can only have 4 people with you. So like for my family of my wife and 2 great kids, I mean, that's it. I couldn't bring anybody else, you know, or we'd be in violation. So he really controls that property. It's not a good thing. We really need to be aware that there's this push to privatize state land or land in general. And, you know, and I kind of have a hard time kind of expressing kind of the whole process here. But, you know, for state land, it's real easy. Aubrey Dunn was trying to restrict hunters' access to state land. You know, he was charging us through the roof. Eventually, you know, they came to an agreement. But so you restrict state land, then nobody cares about it. And then eventually, if no one cares about it, then it's sold and no one says anything.
Right.
You know, it's just this, it's the real easy prescriptive 3-step process. You know, keep people off it. And then no one's going to care about it. And then when they sell it, there's not anybody going to be to complain about it.
What's your sense on how realistic a public land transfer actually is? Do you really think that's something that could actually happen?
It happens. It happened in Utah yesterday. Or yeah, yesterday, but last week. Literally, the state of Utah auctioned or sold, was it like 5,000 acres. So it does happen. People say, you know, it's the boogeyman. You guys are just trying. No, it's a real threat. It's a real issue. If you look at the GOP docket in 2014, it was one of their main issues was to transfer federal land to state land. I mean, anybody can go on to the GOP website and see that. So it's a definitely a push, you know, and they don't make any more land. It's going to become more and more valuable. There's no doubt about that. So, and those that control the land, they control the water rights.
All right.
I mean, it's a big push.
Now, are you guys, is Triton Unlimited involved at the state legislature at all? Because I know that there have been bills and memorials in the past couple of years to sort of do these like study committees, to put together these committees to look at what would it look like for the state to manage public land. So are you guys engaged in that at all?
Absolutely. I think there was like $100,000 that were, it was carved off just to study the transfer of public lands. And it's
what
like
a waste of money.
$100,000. I mean, that's, you know, that's two game and fish officers or, you know, or whatever. Think about what good that could do on the ground. So absolutely, we have to be involved at the state, at the legislative sessions that's coming up this year. It's a short session. So it's going to be all about the finances.
Right, budget.
But you never know. You know, the governor can put it on her call and it can run through the session. So absolutely, we have to be involved. You know, I wish, you know, I was telling my wife the other day, it's like, man, wouldn't it be great if we could just play offense for once? I mean, we're always on defense on these crazy bills that seemingly come out of the southeastern part of the state every year. It's the weirdest thing. I mean, I would love to go on offense and do some good.
Be proactive, yeah.
Yeah, but we're always playing defense, and it's just, you know, maybe that's the plan, is like, if they hit us with enough things, we can't cover everything. And that's why it's really important to have these coalitions and have sportsmen involved. And if any of you guys out there listening that want to go to Santa Fe, get a hold of me. I mean, I will put you in my little truck and we'll drive up to Santa Fe. I'll show you the way it works, you know, because you need to be heard. You need to be there. People may be a little intimidated, you know?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, you're like, I'm going to go see who and where, and I'm going to sit in the roundhouse. I mean,
it's not that bad.
I've
done it.
Yeah. I mean, I was scared to death. I testified on the Gila diversion issue and I was scared to death. And it was just one of those things where like, wow, you know, but I think the bottom line is you always have to remember, you know more about that issue than they do. And, you know, your heart's in the right place and you're just a citizen. You know, that's so if anybody wants to go for a ride, we'll take the trip up there. You know, I think it's good for people to be involved in the process.
Yeah.
Especially kids. We'll take them up there and they need to see, you know, what's going on. I'm taking my son up there this year. We're going to miss a few days of school, but
it'll be worth it.
It'll be worth it. You know, he needs to see the way the process works. So we'll be up there again, short session. We'll probably end up playing defense. You know, it's tough. It's tough.
Jason, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything finally, one final thing that you want to mention to our listeners before we sign off for the day?
No, I think that if I say anything, if you guys learn anything from this show, is get involved. And we don't have, and I say that to anybody, whether you agree with what I say or don't, just get involved and be part of the process. The whole checks and balances and hearing from both sides, we all need to be part of the process. We need to be engaged. Don't be intimidated. If you have any questions, reach out. You know, I'll help you through the process. As far as sportsmen go, guys, we need to really make sure we show up. Showing up is half the battle. I will sit down with you and help you craft letters. I'll help you any way I can. I think that our elected officials, they want to hear from us sometimes. And I think that we need to be heard. We need to be heard, because if we don't advocate for ourselves, no one else is going to do it.
Well said. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today on Earth Matters. It has been a real pleasure for me to share this conversation with you and with our listeners.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Kyle Johnson, our technical engineer and all-around radio guru here at KURU. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for your community support, feedback, and dedication to our community radio. You can tune in to Earth Matters every Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. on 89.1 FM, as well as listen to podcasts of each show at gmcr.org. This is what community radio looks like and sounds like. Have a wonderful day, everyone.